No. Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf and days in Bechoros. It's the final daf of the 8th parak of Bechoros. We are catching up. We're on Nun Alpha and Beis. And we are at the very top of the page. Chayev lo, right? Kasev lo kamashu, chayev lo chamesh lam, chayev li tein lo. We're quoting from the Mishnah. And we are starting from this point forward. Okay, we're talking 8th parak of Bechoros, just to make sure we're all grounded. We're talking about the obligation of giving the Kohen your pidyon haben. You want to redeem your firstborn son. Your firstborn son has Kedusha, needs to be redeemed, not like regular Kedusha. But still, nevertheless, the Torah demands that you have to give 5 salim to a Kohen. Yesterday, for the most part, we talked about actually how to assess those 5 salim. Talked about the increase that the Chachamim made on the coin, and so therefore 20% greater than that which was given. Okay, and then the Mishnah, which we started with yesterday, talks about the actual hitzchayvus. It talks about the actual obligation that you have to give to the Kohen. And you can't pay with land. In other words, shava kesef works. You can pay with anything that's equivalent to money, right? Anything of value, but you can't give the Kohen property, you can't give him a neve kanani, and you can't give him a shtar, and you can't give him a note, meaning let's say if somebody owes you money, let's say you have a bond, and so you go over to the Kohen, you say, here's my bond. I'd like to, and this is now going to be satisfaction for my pidyon haben, so that it's not good. The Mishnah says it's not going to work.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask. Yesterday in Chita's Rebbe about klol prak makor or riboy mia, Rebbe usually goes klol prak klol.
That was the Gemara's conclusion.
Klol prak klol is just klol klol then prak.
Right.
So Rebbe didn't want to flip it, so he finds out that riboy mia is better for learning this. Okay.
Right, that's correct. That's correct.
Simply doesn't work.
Meaning, and then the Mishnah has a funny psak. The Mishnah says, "What if you write a what if you're an IOU?" Okay, so in other words, you sit there and you say to the Kohen, "I owe you 5 salim," and you hand them that note. Now, obviously, that's not going to work. Meaning, you can't even give them somebody else's note. Certainly, you can't. Your own note is not going to be helpful. You know, and the obligation's already there. But that, okay, fine. That's not going to work. But then the Mishnah says something which is fascinating. The Mishnah says, and then you give him 5 salim to satisfy the note. So the Mishnah says, okay, good. And now you owe him pidyon haben. and now you're going to have to pay pidyon haben. That's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, kasav l'kohen shu chayv lo chamish shalim, chayv li tein lo. The Mishnah says that you have to give him the 5 salim. And then the Mishnah writes, the Gemara doesn't quote this part of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah writes, uveno in a pardui, and your son's not redeemed. Which means now that you have to go into your pocket and take out again 5 salim and give it to the Kohen. Now, does that make sense? The answer, of course, is no. That doesn't make sense. Yeah. In other words, well, understand, just because you wrote the Kohen an IOU note, now that's it, you ruined it for yourself? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But the Gemara explains, Amar Ula, right, we're on the third line for the top of the page, Amar Ula, Dvar Torah, Beno Padui, Lechishi Yitain. Okay, the truth of the matter is that your son is redeemed. You gave the Kohen 5 salim. Okay, you wrote a note, but in other words, but your son is redeemed, really. So minotaur is your son's redeemed. So this is obviously a takanas chachamim. It's rabbinic legislation. The rabbis blocked the pidyon haben. They have the right to do that. They have the power to do that. When it comes to mamonos, any time it deals with monetary law, the chachamim have very, very strong power. The concept is hefker based in hefker, meaning based in can tell you that even though you paid, you didn't satisfy an obligation. Okay, they have that kind of power. Why do they want to exercise that power over here, right? Obviously, there's thought, a lot of thought, that goes into every time they legislate. So why would they want to do that over here? My time ain't but no padui, gzera shem yamro podin bishtar. It's a gzera, obviously. It's a rabbinic legislation. It's a rabbinic gzera. The chachamim were concerned. Look what just happened. You wrote a note. You handed it to the Kohen. Okay? Then you satisfied the note. But to the casual observer, it looks like that you just redeemed your son with a note. Looks that way. Now, the next time this happens, somebody's going to go ahead and say, you know, I heard that Sugarman redeemed his kid using a note. Okay, fine, must be that you could use notes. So he takes a bond, hands it to the Kohen, and says, here's for pidyon haben. And it's not going to work because they imposed a bishtar. You're not allowed to redeem with a shtar. It just simply doesn't work. Dollar bills is less of an issue, although you're right, though. In other words, used to be dollar bills were backed by backed by gold. So then, yes, yeah, so then it could be that that's the note. But they're not backed by gold anymore. You knew that. You know more about money than I do. But yeah, they're just, you know, it's. But you're right. They're not intrinsically valuable.
Of course, it's a piece of paper. One second. What would it be look like that way when the coins say, "Wait a second, you can't."
I understand that. In other words, correct. It's this looks like paying with a note is a little bit of a. It's not precise because you're not paying with a note. You're paying with money.
I understand, but that the coin will tell him, "Wait a second, you can't redeem yourself."
Correct. But we're worried about the casual observer who's going to be seeing you transferring the note. Okay, that is Ula's understanding. Tanit Tana Kamid Rav Nachman ben Apadu lechishi yitain. So the Gemara quotes a brisa, and in front of Rav Nachman, and the brisa says, "No, your son's redeemed." Meaning, if you went through this procedure, which was unnecessary, but you went through this procedure where you wrote the Kohen a note saying, "I owe you," and then you pay the 5 salaim. So the brisa says your son's redeemed. So Amalei Rav Nachman Zudiv Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Stimasa. So Rav Nachman immediately says, "Look, that's a brisa, but you understand that's not the accepted opinion. That's not the majority opinion. That is Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. Amalei Zudiv Rav Elazar Rav Yishem and Stimasa." Or some have another version of who exactly the author of that brisa is. But the point is that's not the accepted position of a Chachamim Omrim. But our Mishnah, which is a Chachamim, which is a reflection of the Shitas Chachamim, is that your son is not redeemed, and that's in fact the halacha, your son is not redeemed, as to why. So go back to what Ula said. Ula said it has to do with the fact that this is a Gzera Derabban, it's a rabbinic decree. Lefichach imratza ha-kohen liten lo b'matan rashai. Okay, the Kohen can give it back to you. Okay, it's his money. So in other words, you give him 5 salaim, he wants to give it back to you as a gift, fine. Okay. What do you do with the money? Correct. Danin lahadatan rabbanan. We learned in a brisa. Nasal asar kohanim vasachas yatsa. Okay. A funny scenario. Brisa over here deals with the following. Let's say you have an assemblage of 10 kohanim. You don't want to offend anyone. You don't. Right, now what you're going to do, you're going to select 1 coin for the pigeon aben. I mean, that's what we do, but I'm saying, but you, so what do? You give 5 salim to 10 kohanim, right? In other words, each coin is going to be getting now a half a sela. Mm. It works. Brisa says it works. B'zecher zeh yatsa. Not lo v'hichziru lo yatsa. And if you give it to him and you take it back, you're also yosei. In other words, you don't even have to. He doesn't have to keep the money. He wants to give it back to you. That's fine. Rabbi Tarfon, that was his minag. Shayenotol umachzir. He would take the money and he would give it right back to the guy. Okay, good. And the son's redeemed, meaning pigeon aben was done. Ukishisham chachamim bedavar amar kiyem zeh halachazu. And when the chachamim heard about what Rabbi Tarfon said, he says, "Oh, Rabbi Tarfon, he was mekayim this mitzvah. This mitzvah." Halacha zuvasulo. The Gemara just is bothered by the limiting. What seems to be the Chachamim are giving him a backhanded compliment. Right, Rabbi Tarfon. Yeah, he fulfilled this mitzvah. Right, and no other mitzvah. Elakim ze af halacha zu. Okay, a little bit of a change. It means even this mitzvah. Rabbi Chanina haveragu v'shakil umehader. So Rabbi Chanina had the same minhag where he would take. The pigeon of Ben money, apparently he was a Kohen. He would take the pigeon of Ben money and he would just let him return it. So now there's a guy who's chasing after Rabbi Chanina, meaning, I heard about this Rabbi Chanina. Great guy, great Kohen. You give him the pigeon of Ben and he just gives it right back to you. So he's running after Rabbi Chanina. Amar lei. Lo gamart v'yavdi medam bish. Now, a couple of different girsas in terms of what the actual girsas of the Gemara is, right? Bish avadata. Bish means bad. You did bad, right? But let's go back though to the line previous. Amar le lo gamart v'yavdi. Right? Gemir's das. Gemir's das means that any time that you need any type of transaction, you need a firm commitment, a firm verbal, but more important than verbal. Meaning, in your mind, you have to know that the sale's been done, right? That's really what kinyanim is all about. Meaning, anytime we have a discussion about kinyan, right, a handshake, right? Whatever Kenyan Sudar, whatever type of Kenyan we're talking about, basically we want to know that there was a transaction. So Rabbi Chanina says to this guy, it's not a real transaction, because when you gave it to me knowing that I was going to give it back to you. That's not giving. That's nothing. That's you know.
Lending, not even.
Not even. So logamart v'yavt, meidam bish avarata. You did a bad thing. Meaning that wasn't good. Hilkachem b'napadu, and therefore Rabbi Chanina says that your son is not redeemed. Okay, interesting. So we have two, Rabbi Chanina, Tana, or is it Amora? Either way, two rabbis of the Gemara, two Kohanim of the Gemara, who had a minhag, who had a practice of accepting the money and then giving it right back. And Rabbi Chanina basically lambasted an individual who was looking for him, knowing that that was his minhag, to take the money and give it back. And Rabbi Chanina says, nah, you didn't really give because you knew that that was my minhag. But generally speaking, they took the money and they gave it back. Couple points over here. Both of those points are found in Tosfos. Hilkach ein bina padui. Look at Tosfos, fourth Tosfos on the page. Teima, Maishla Mimitana Manas Lahachzir. Now, Tosfos says that we have a concept in halacha that comes up a number of times, and that's Matana Manas Lahachzir, which means that you can accept a gift on the condition that you're going to return the gift. Meaning Indian giving is, in fact, accepted idea in halacha. This comes up most popularly on Sukkos. Right? On the first day of Sukkah, you have to have ownership over your lulav and your esrog. And for whatever reason, you don't have a lulav and an esrog. In Europe, right, you see the Ashkenazic Rishonim always struggle because in one town, they may have one lulav, one esrog. So on the first day, you need ownership. So what do? So one of the processes which you could do, the Gemara already gives a suggestion, is matana amanas lahachzir, meaning I'll give you the lulav and esrog on the condition that you give it back to me, and it works. And that is an acceptable, a halachic acceptable position to take, where it's a matana amanas lahachzir. So good, that works. So Tosfos is bothered. Such a good question. Maishra me matana amanas lahachzir. The Arminim prepare comment decision, the Beno Padui, the Mesik Bekulu Kani. Look, there are a number of scenarios, Pidgin Aben being one of them, where Matana Aman Asa Hachzir actually works. So if that's true, so Tosa says, so how did Rabbi Chanina arrive at his conclusion? You knew that you were getting back the money, therefore it wasn't a Kenyan Gamor. Shouldn't that be just the same as Matana Aman Asa Hachzir?
No, well, you didn't really know because you may not. He had a the guy who gave had a mind,
but Rabbi Chanina. Right. Pretty much what Tosfos is going to say. V'yeshlamar, the hach Rabbi Chanina lo haya rotz lezakos ela b'matana gemura. Meaning, matana manas lahachzir works, but you have to, both parties have to understand that's what's going on. Right? Rabbi Chanina wasn't interested in that. Rabbi Chanina wanted the gift to be irrevocable, and then Rabbi Chanina on his own wanted to then return it. In other words, matana manas lahachzir only works when both parties agree at the very onset, look, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to give it to you, and the condition is that my gift to you works only if you decide to give it, if you're going to give it back to me. Right? That's matana manas lahachzir. Each party has to be clear at the very origination that this is what's going to happen. Rabbi Chanina, that's not how he wanted Pidgin Aben to work. He wanted Pidgin Aben to be irrevocable, and then afterwards, then on my own volition, on my own terms, I want to give it back. So he wasn't redeemed, so I guess
he gave
him back the money.
And then
I guess we'll have to go through it again.
And he gets through and he said, no, I'm having a full house.
Right. Right. Yeah, in other words, right. But that first time though was not it was not Belev Shalem. Okay, now next issue Tosfos deals with. Okay? Miu Kaksas Tema. So issue number one was how come Matana Manas Lahachzir is not effective, and the answer is no, it is effective, but both parties have to say from the very beginning, this is how we're going to do it. That's not how Rabbi Chanina wanted it to be done. A second issue of Tosfos, Miuksas Tema. The Kemish Ayy Rabbi Tafan Rabbi Chanin Machzir and Kol Sha'ah Nimsu Mashkitim Bris Halevi. She Afsidu Shar Kohanim Shalo Yitnu El Alahem Imne Shehem Regim Lahachzir. Tosus, the second issue, also just a great discussion. Tosus says, here's what also what I don't understand. You have Kohanim like Rabbi Tarfon and like Rabbi Chanina. Aren't they ruining it for all the other Kohanim?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is the answer would seem to be, sure, they're ruining it for everybody else. Who's going to want to go to a Kohen knowing that there's one Kohen in town who always gives it back?
Right.
Right. And we know part of the Bris Kahuna and the Bris Levin, Tosfos quotes the Gemara that we did earlier in the Masechta, is that you're not allowed to be mashkis, you're not allowed to corrupt the system. I know this is not like a genuine corruption of the system. No one's being corrupt over here, but by taking and giving it back, you're basically corrupting the system.
Right.
You're not corrupting the system, but you're basically ruining the system because the whole system is predicated on this is a gift for the Kohen. And as a gift for the Kohen, every Kohen should have equal rights, equal accessibility to get it. And once you establish yourself as a Kohen, as the one who gives it back, nobody's going to go to anybody else. Okay? And this bothers Tosos, and Tosos says, how does that work? V'yesh lamar, so Tosos makes another suggestion. She'ein hanosein yodea b'shah shenosein im yachziru lo v'lo karinam be shichasem b'salevi d'mah lana b'mah shiachzir lo achar kach. So Tosos makes one suggestion, which is that randomly they would give it back, randomly they would not give it back. And you didn't know whether or not today was your lucky day. And so therefore, not everybody would go to this Kohen because he wouldn't always give it back. Okay, one suggestion. V'gam shema lo hayu machzir ne'ela la'aniyim. Tosfos makes another suggestion. Wonderful idea. Tosfos says, maybe Rabbi Chanin and Rabbi Tarfon only gave it back if the giver was poor. Giver was poor, and Rabbi Chanin and Rabbi Tarfon understood, you know, I don't really need the money, and he needs it much more than I do. Good, I'll accept the money in order so that his son now is redeemed. And then I'll give it back. If you'll forgive me, the Robin Hood of Kohanim. Okay. No, not exactly. He's not stealing. Not stealing. Okay, but right, but just a sensitivity towards the poor people. But if somebody comes in and, right, Tosfos says he looks rich, right? Comes to the Pigeon of Ben, nice suit. Correct. Correct. Okay. The coins, they actually, you buy back the coin. I mean, the people tend to buy back. You have coins or you don't have coins?
I think I've done it before, and I was giving coins, and then the rabbi auctioned it off. Raise money.
Could be. But you have to accept it, meaning that's the whole idea behind Pigeon and Ben, is that you need a belav gamor with a full heart and with a full commitment. You got to accept the money. What you do afterwards is totally up to you. It's your money.
Wait, 1 second. The coin has that full heart to accept?
Both. Both parties. Both parties in every transaction. It's a transaction.
What is the coin?
Everyone needs Kenyan Gamor. You can't be forced to accept something.
No, I'm saying if it takes it, I don't know what.
I understand. I understand. But the giver, I understand. The more emphasis on the giver than on the taker. But in every transaction, both parties have to be willing. Hamafrish pigeon aben benova. I'm sorry. Hamafrish pigeon benova. Avad chayav birchu yusam. Okay. Last thing of the Mishnah is the following. Let's say I have my five salaim. I'm totally ready to give it, and I even put it aside and I put it in my special safe, and then my special safe spot in my house, and then I forget where my special space safe spot in my house is. Like in other words, I'm looking all over it. I can't find it. I lost it. I lost the money. The money that I actually set aside for the Kohen, I lost it. So you could make an argument and you could say, well, you know, I did put it aside for the Kohen, right? It doesn't work. In other words, at that point in time, you're still on the hook, right? Chaya b'achriyuso, because you need to give it to the Kohen. If you didn't give it to the Kohen, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. I know that's obvious. I know it sounds obvious, but you could have made an argument. It's like a carbon, like a carbon adava. Right, the carbon adava, you set aside the carbon, and then you lost it. Okay, but you don't have to. You're not on the hook.
You have to replace it.
By nedar, yes. By nedava, no. By nedava, you don't have to replace it. Okay, I'm just posing an argument you could make, but that's obviously not the path we're going to take. Me nalan. The Gemara wants to know, where's this halacha come from? So I'm Rabbi Shimon Malacha Shasi Erech Erech Me'erchin. Now you realize before I read on further in the Gemara, the me nalan is a funny question the Gemara is asking. Why? Look back at the Mishnah Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, and the Mishnah over there writes Amafish Pidgin Ben Va'Avid Chayv Be'Achriyusu Shenemar. The Mishnah gives a pasuk. It's yielacha. Once it goes to you, meaning once I transfer the money from me to Dan, then pado tifded, then the redemption is done. So the Gemara is asking the question of minalan. So you already understand the Gemara. What? What's the Gemara doing over there? That doesn't make sense. Okay, stay tuned. Stay tuned because the Gemara itself is going to recognize that this is an issue. Minalan. Amar Shem Malakish Aski Erech Erech Mi Erechin. So he says it comes out as Gzereshava from Erechin. Meaning by Erechin, I make a donation based on the value of somebody else or the value of myself. And here when it comes to Erech, next Masechta, it's based on a schedule. The Torah gives you a schedule at the end of Parshas Bechukosai, how much money you need to actually give. So there, the mitzvah is not fulfilled until you give the money. Rav Dimi, I'm Rav Yonasan, uvechor b'chor banecha tivde, v'lo yiru panai reikam. Redeem your firstborn sons, it says at the end of Parshas Kisisa, and lo yiru panai reikam. When you come to see me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shalosh Regalim, three festivals of the year, don't see me empty-handed. And from here we learn out that you have to bring karbonos when you go to Yerushalayim. Karbon re'iya, chagiga, Shami, carbon simcha. Anyway, v'yalav reikam reikam me'olas re'iya. Ma'olas re'iya chai b'achriyusa, pichin ha'ben chai b'achriyusa. Meaning, on the Shalosh Regalim, you go up to Yerushalayim, and you bring your carbon ola. Okay, and you set it aside a carbon ola, but you lost it. Did you fulfill the mitzvah? Nope. You have not fulfilled the mitzvah, you need to actually bring the carbon. So maskef l'ra papa kra l'kra. So Rav Papa says, what is going on over here? Meaning we're trying to bring psukim to prove the point of the Mishnah, that if I set aside the money, so that's not enough. I need to actually give the money to the Kohen. Kra l'kra? Meaning, what are you doing? You're looking for a pasuk to explain a pasuk? Elam Rav Papa, hamadiktani tami yelecha ach padot evder. So Rav Papa says, look, as far as the halacha, that you need to give the money to the Kohen, and you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah until you give the money to the Kohen, that's the pasuk of Ach Pado Tifteh, right? When you give him the money, then your child is redeemed. Now, what was confusing, and now what we're going to try to unconfuse, is the halacha of Reish Lakish, or I should say rather the pasuk of Reish Lakish. That was going on the first part of the Mishnah. Oh, that's what it's going on. It's going on, what happens if, Rachman Litzlan, after 30 days, your son dies? And you didn't redeem him yet. Do you still have to redeem him? And the answer is yes, you do. Why? That's what the Reish Lakish Pasuk is going on. That's the Minalan. What does that go? Where do we know that from? So, Yitain, Minalan, Amr Shimon Lakish, Asi, Erech, Erech, Me'erchin. So we learn it out through the halacha of Erechin. By Erechin, if you say Erech Ploni Alai, his value is upon me, and Rachman Slan, that person dies, you're still on the hook. Meaning it has become an obligation upon you, even though that person is no longer, but that's still an obligation upon you, and you haven't fulfilled your obligation until the money's transferred. Rav Dimi, Rav Yerushan, V'chol B'chor B'necha Tivte, V'lo Yupin Erechim, Malahalan Yerushan Chayavin, Afkan Yorshin Chayavin. In the case of Olas Re'iya, the father dies, even though he set aside an animal, that animal still has to go up as a carbon, even though the father is no longer. Okay, so in other words, the obligation, once the father is alive and the obligation has started, the obligation needs to be concluded, meaning you need to give that carbon. Someone needs to give that carbon, the Yorish gives the carbon. Here too, even though Rachman's son, the son dies, but still the money has to be transferred. Okay, last stop. Here we go. We start with the Mishnah. Okay, and we start off now. We're at the end of the eighth perek, but we start with the halachas of Bechor. one daf of Becharos that deals with the halachas of Pishtayim. Okay, you and I know that as a Bechor, you get a double portion. The Torah says, Parsha Kiseitse, beginning of the Parsha, so he gets a double everyone else. It's a simple formula. In other words, if you like algebra, even if you don't like algebra, so let's say there are five sons, so that means now that each son is going to be represented by the variable x. The oldest son is going to be represented by the variable 2x, and then you just count up the x's together with the oldest son of 2x divided by whatever the estate is, and then the oldest son is going to get 2x. He's going to get a double portion of what everyone else is going to get. Habachor notel pishnayim benichsei ha'av. He gets a double portion of the estate of the father, ve'eno notel pishnayim benichsei ha'aim. Not the estate of the mother. Okay, estate of the mother? Well, what is, right, and I don't mean this in a chauvinist way, even though I'm trying to be. Mother has an estate, so the answer is, yeah. She can have. Right, Rashi says over here it's Nechse Malug, it's referring to her Nechse Malug. Could also be Nechse Tzom Barzel as well. Okay, in other words, Nechse Malug, in other words, she can inherit properties. Now, by Nechse Malug in a marriage, if she's a married woman, so her husband has rights to those properties, right? He can get payers from that property, all right? If he wants, he can gamble with that property. He's on the hook for that property, meaning, he can't gamble with that property. No, Nichsei Tzom Barzel, he can gamble with that property. He's just, he's always on the hook for the principal. Nichsei Malug, he can't. Nichsei Malug, he only gets the payers. Okay, but the point is, she can have properties. The oldest son's Pishnaim entitlement is only for his estate, not for mom's estate. Ve'eino notel pishnaim b'nechse ha'im. Ve'eino notel b'shevach v'lo bara'oi kebemochza. Two other things that we have to do in terms of an accounting of the estate and in terms of determining what the oldest son is entitled to. Number one, he doesn't get shevach. Meaning, if after the death of the father, the land goes through improvement, right? In other words, maybe it takes a year for the estate to get divided amongst the sons. And there's an appreciation of the estate. Okay? The oldest son does not get pishnayim of that. Meaning his pishnayim is frozen at the moment of death. The moment of death now becomes that critical moment where you take the estate, you assess it right there and then, and that's what he's entitled to pishnayim. If there's any appreciation of estate after the death of the father, that's equitably distributed amongst the brothers, and the oldest does not get pishnayim of that. Additionally, account receivables. Mm-hmm. Account receivables of the estate, that is also, I know I sound like a lawyer right now, Dan likes this. Account receivables of the estate also is not a pishnayim entitlement, and so therefore any account receivable, it's going to come in, but that is not accounted in terms of the pishnayim, that is also equitably distributed amongst all the brothers.
Present.
It has to be currently present, right? That and only that is going to be the pishnayim entitlement of the Bechor. Okay,
what about the debts? The debts are going to be counted into it or not?
Like you double the debt.
No. What are you suggesting?
No, you're saying you subtract the debt and then whatever is present you give.
Yeah, sure.
I assume. I mean, the debt means that money is not
there.
It's not there.
I'm not saying like you have a certain amount of cash and you have a certain amount of debt.
Right.
You satisfy the debt and then.
Yeah, I assume so. I mean, no one inheriting a debt. I mean, I know people do it all the time, but I'm saying that's not part of the estate.
Yeah, first of all, it's the
debt has to be satisfied.
Mm-hmm. The lien
has
to be debt.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. V'loa isha b'ksuvaso. Now, this idea of. So in this Mishnah, so the Bechor's rights to Pishnaim is limited. Number one, it's not the estate of the mother. It's only the estate of the father. Number two, it is no appreciation after the death of the father. If the property appreciates, he's not entitled to that as a Pishnaim entitlement, meaning of course he'll get equitably as all the other brothers would get, but he doesn't get a Pishnaim entitlement. And then one more thing is that he doesn't get account receivables. Any account receivable that is due to the estate, he's not going to get pishnayim of that as well. Okay. Additionally, we're now on the top of Nun Beis Amad Aleph. V'lo ha'isha b'ksuvasa. v'lo habanos b'mizonoseihem. Same thing regarding a woman in her ksuva. Meaning, regarding a woman in her ksuva, now Rashi over here limits. Rashi says this is really just talking about the shevach. Okay? If there's any appreciation, the woman is not going to be entitled to any appreciation of property. Meaning that she does have a lien on all of her husband's property. And that lien will entitle her to satisfy the ksuva that she's entitled to, but not to shevach. Shevach is not considered, there's no lien on appreciation. Same thing regarding the banos, regarding mizonos. Meaning, the dad dies, daughters get supported by the estate. Remember, they're not part of the Yerusha. They're not getting an inheritance of the estate. I know, right? If you want, you can override that, bizmanenu, but aliba de hilchus, according to strict letter of the law, they don't get part of the Yerusha. So how do they get supported? So they're going to get supported by either a husband. Now, they're daughters, they're girls. In other words, there is no husband to talk about right now. So, the estate of the father is going to support them until they get married. Okay? That is part of the Tanai Ksuva, that's part of the conditions of Ksuva, meaning when a husband marries a woman, he says to her, doesn't have to say it, it's part of the contract, it's contractually obligated, that if and when we have daughters, the daughters are going to get supported by my estate, if I die, until they get married. Okay, this is what's called mizonos. So now, the daughter's entitlement to mizonos only comes from the estate, but no appreciation of the estate, meaning after the death of the father, their father. If the estate appreciates, they're not entitled to that.
So the poor, when does he get his portion, the double portion, if they have to set aside money?
That's account payables, meaning that's like Hedy spoke about earlier. That's an obligation. That has to be earmarked as part of the estate that's going
to
be...
before it's divided, they have to set it aside?
Yeah, even after it's divided, meaning they're going to have to understand that although we're dividing the estate, there's an account payable, which is to the daughters. The daughters need to get the mizonos.
Aren't these daughters from a previous marriage?
Not necessarily. I mean, it could be, but not necessarily.
So if they divide, give two portions to the first one...
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Rashi does say that it's talking about from a previous marriage as well. But it's also true. I mean, the same thing would be true with his own daughters.
Right. If they divide first and give two portions to the firstborn,
right,
then when it comes to give the daughter, the first one has to give two portions.
I don't think so. I understand what you're saying, though, but I don't think so. In other words, the pishtaim is an entitlement, but then he has to take a double portion of the... of the account payable? I mean, he's just one guy.
Nobody received two.
Correct, he received two.
There's a big difference if you satisfy the debt and then divide.
Okay.
I hear
your point. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But
I thought that the reason he received two because he was supposed to take care.
I mean, the Torah doesn't say. The Torah never says. I mean, look, we have he's a bechor, he's a firstborn. In other words, yes. Bechor.
Just to have responsibility.
The Torah doesn't put strings. The Torah does not attach strings to the pishnayim. The Torah ki lo yeh mishpat habechorah. In other words, it's just a rule. I shared this with you before. I like this idea. Again, it's not the reason why. I mean, look up the chinuch. I have a good feeling. I have not looked up the chinuch, but if you look up the sefer chinuch, he'll give you the reason. But he'll say something along the lines of, I'm guessing right now, right? Disclaimer, I'm guessing. He'll say something along the lines of, he is the head of the household. He is the replacement of the father. He will have more responsibilities. But understand though, the Torah doesn't tie the two together. It, you know, if he fails as a Bechor, he's going to lose his Bechor, although we do see Reuven fail as a Bechor and lose his Bechor. And that may be a good point, but that's all pre-Man Torah. The word Bechor, I think I've shared this idea with you in the past. The word Bechor is made up of the letters Beis, which numerically is 2, Chaf, which is numerically 20, and Resh, which gematria is 200. So it's 222, the double portion. And, right, you'll like this. I know you'll like this. Bracha, same idea. In other words, leave out the hay. Right, well, because we're looking at the root of the word, right? Barech, right? Also, same letters, right? 2 beis reish chaf, 220, meaning everything is double. Okay, so So I'm sorry. Back to the Mishnah. V'lo, right, I should have first finished the Mishnah and then go to the nice ideas. V'lo ha'isha miksuv asa. V'lo ha'banus b'mezonoseim. V'lo ha'yavam. Also the yavam as well, right? Yavam inherits, right? Not a well known halacha, but it's, you know, in other words, one of the motivating factors for all the brothers. Who's going to be the yavam? Who's going to be the one? First of all, the first option goes to the oldest brother to do the mitzvah of yibum. Okay. If he doesn't want to do it, so then you ask around to the other brothers, like who's interested. The Yavam gets to inherit the entire estate of his deceased brother.
So if the Bechor does the Yibum, he's going to get three
shares. He's going to get the share of his brother, and he's get, right.
What happens if the Bechor dies, and the second brother, does he inherit, does he get the Pishnayim?
Well, no, because that'll be Roy, that's not Muchzak. It has to be Muchzak. It has to be.
They die at the same time.
Oh, okay. let's try to keep it simple. It's already complicated enough as it is. Okay, v'lo ha'yavam, and the same thing is true regarding Yavam. In other words, when the Yavam inherits his brother's estate, which he's entitled to, so same story. He's not going to get the shevach. He's not going to get the appreciated value of the property after the death of the brother. Meaning, what he's entitled to and what he's only entitled to is only going to be the current value of the state at the time of death. The kulan, and I guess, I'm guessing, right, Rashi by Yavam says he doesn't get Shevach and he doesn't get Roya as well. He doesn't get appreciation and he does not get account receivables. I'm guessing, so then who gets it? Meaning if the Yavam's not getting it, so I'm just, again, there's a little bit of, I'm just applying a little bit of common sense, so then it would be equitably distributed by the brothers. Okay. The kulam ain't notlim b'shevach v'lo b'raika b'mochzak. And for all of them, they don't take shevach and they don't take raika b'mochzak. Now, Mishnah sounds like it's repeating it. Yeah, the Mishnah sounds like it's repeating itself, as we've already made these points very clear in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to ask, what's the Mishnah trying to do over there? Stay tuned later on. Okay, in the meantime, my taima, what's the reason? Meaning, first things first, remember, Gemara always follows chronologically in the Mishnah. We're going back to the first point of the Mishnah. As a Bechor, you get Pishnayim of dad's estate, not mom's estate. Why not mom's estate? I'm a Krav. Lo Mishpat HaBechora. Mishpat HaBechora Le'ish Ve'in Mishpat HaBechora Le'isha. So it's a law. Mishpat. Right? And men are part of the judicial process, and women in general are not part of the judicial process. So therefore, it's Mishpat. So therefore, it's only the father's Yerusha, not the mother's Yerusha. Ve'inu Nota B'Shevach Tichsi B'Chol HaShem So he also doesn't get shevach, he doesn't get appreciation because kol asher yematzeh lo. Anything that is found to him, meaning at the time of death, that is the point where we freeze the estate. We don't freeze it. But in other words, we look at the estate, that and only that is what the Bechor is entitled to. Same basic idea, right? Same thing with account receivable. Meaning, of course, account receivables, they are going to come into the estate, obviously. But right now they're not here. They're not muchzak. You're not holding it, and so therefore, since you may be holding a lien, but you're not holding the actual account receivable, so the actual money, and so therefore, that's also not counted towards pishnayim. V'lo isha b'ksuvasa ini v'amar shmo ba'chov goves ha'shevach. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. General creditors are entitled to appreciation, meaning that if I am a creditor on somebody and I have a lien on his property. Not only do I have a lien on his property, I have a lien on also future shevach as well. Appreciation of property, I'll take that as well. I'm entitled to that as well. So a general lien holder on properties is entitled not only to its current value, but any future appreciation as well. So the Gemara asks now a really simple question. So this woman, she's a lien holder.
Right. I remember like during Balabasha, there are like different levels of land that you're entitled to, like the lender gets the highest quality land, right?
Right.
The wife gets a less.
Okay, fine. Land. So good, perfect. It's not that, but it's
the same level.
Correct. So in other words, basically, right? Ben's right. She's a lien holder. She's a creditor, but not an A plus creditor, right? We don't, right?
Really
she doesn't hold the AAA bond. it is a weaker level of credit. I'm Rabbi Abba. Mikule Ksuva Shanukan. This is one of the leniencies of Ksuva. We say leniencies of Ksuva, meaning don't ask her. She's not going to view it as a leniency. She's going to say, wait a second. I'm losing over here. Meaning, what do you mean? All other creditors are entitled to appreciation of property, and I'm not? And the answer is yes, that's correct. Because it's true that she is a creditor, but just simply not at the same degree, not at the same level as a regular creditor. And yes, she will not. She is not entitled to the appreciation of the property. And as far as the daughters are concerned, they're also not entitled to the shevach. Why? Because that's part of Tanai Ksuva, meaning that's part of the contractual obligation of the Ksuva. And when you learn Ksuva, so you'll hear this again and again. Tanai Ksuva, Kiksuva. Any contractual obligation of the Ksuva stands just like the Ksuva and is bound by the same laws and entitlements as the Ksuva. So what did we just learn by Ksuva? That the woman, as a Ksuva holder, is not entitled to Shevach. The daughters who are going to get supported because of the contractual obligation of the Ksuva, also not entitled to Shevach as well. Right. Well, for hers from a previous marriage, they're going to have to contractually obligate. In other words, they're going to have to go to contract over that, and that'll be included in the ksuva. But once included in the ksuva, it's going to have the same status, same strength as the ksuva.
But their daughters, are they specifically included in the ksuva?
Their daughters.
From that marriage.
I think they have to be added. I mean, if their own daughters?
Yeah, their own daughters.
It's automatic. That automatically goes into the ksuva. It's understood. Part of the ksuva. Okay. Even if it's not worded in the ksuva, meaning it's still part and parcel of the ksuva. Okay. V'loa yavam, aitama b'chor kaya rachmana. Now, the yavam is basically like a b'chor. Okay. It's a little bit of a drush. Meaning, obviously, this is halacha. We're not darshaning over here. It's not real drasha. It's not like homiletics. But the Torah, when describing the yavam, uses the phrase bechor, and it tips us off that the yavam is going to have the same status as bechor. Meaning, just like the bechor is not entitled to count receivables and to shevach, yavam as well, not entitled to count receivables and shevach. Am Rabbi Lo Shanela b'shevach sheishbichu nechassim b'misal yibam. Aval de ben yibam lechaluka shakel. Now, what Abai would like to suggest is like this. After he did Yibum, before the properties were divided, Abai says he's going to get a double portion of that. Okay? My time, Yakum Hashem Achiv HaMeis HaMerechmana V'Harei Kam. Because once you do the mitzvah of Yibum, you basically now take the place of the brother. Harei Kam? So he's here already. So therefore, he's going to get an entitlement to any shevach that comes from this point forward. Rav Amar filu de ben yibum lechaluka nami lo shakam aitama kibachor ma bechor ein lo kodem chaluka av yavam nami ein lo kodem chaluka. And Rav says, no. What are you talking about? Meaning, even if you're right, like Abaye, let's think about it for a moment. Let's say you're right. Once he does a mitzvah of yibum, so he now takes the place of his brother. He's not stronger than his brother. He takes the place of his brother. Meaning, what do we know? That when it comes to the brother, had he been the Bechor, he's not going to get entitlement to Shevach. Meaning, he's only going to get entitlement to whatever is at the estate at the time of death. So the Yavam, who takes his place, he's not going to get more than that. So in other words, no, he's not going to get Shevach, even between Yibum and Chaluka. The Kula Mei Nolim B'Shevach, we're now on the top of Nenbeis Amud Beis. La Asu Yeshivcha D'Mimela. What's the Mishnah doing at the end? The Mishnah is saying at the end, oh, and by the way, you should only know all these people are not getting Shevach and they're not getting account receivables. Right? Don't we know that already? An answer? It says the Gemara. La Asu Yeshivcha D'Mimela. Let's say it's an appreciation of value that happened automatically. You didn't do anything. Right? Stocks is such a good example, even though the Gemara is not talking about stocks. The Gemara is talking about property. So, but stocks is such a good example because, yeah, in other words, dad dies and then the stock went up. Right? No, nobody did anything to create that appreciation. It happened. Or the Gemara, as it gives the example of property, says, let's say grain grew on the ground on its own. No, nobody worked the field. So it appreciated on its own. So there, even though the Shevach was not, in other words, nobody did anything to create that Shevach, but still, the oldest son's Pishnaim entitlement does not include that. Next, right? What about account receivables? What is the Mishnah telling us? Oh, you know, the firstborn's not entitled to account receivables. Right? We made that point already. What if it's super account receivables? Yeah, you love it. You don't get this terminology anywhere else. You just get it here. This is the only place you get it. What if it's super account receivables? Meaning, let's say your grandfather, right? God forbid, dad dies before the grandfather. And so you know that when the grandfather dies, so his estate is now going to go to his father, but his father's no longer there, so it's going to come down to you. That's super account receivables, meaning that's something, you know, you don't want to count on it, but in other words, it's something you can count on. It's not like a creditor where you might get paid, you may not get paid, he may default. Over here, you know it's going to happen, right? Not wishing for it, but you know it's going to happen. So I might have viewed that kind of account receivable more like a muchzak than like ra'i. Meaning it's, you know, it's there.
It's just a matter of time.
It's not enough. Meaning the Mishnah's point is it has to be muchzak. It has to be assets held by the estate. Anything which is a future account receivable, a future income, the potential income is not counted towards the Pishnayim. Period and period. And end of. Right, here it's a stronger potential. Still not enough. Okay, good. We'll stop over here. We have a Mishnah and one more sugya to go through for tomorrow. We'll finish the 8th parak tomorrow. Begin the 9th parak of Bechoros tomorrow. Everyone have a very easy fast.